This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Responsibilities, the voting responsibilities of a president and vice president of a council are when they assume the duties of a mayor. So if you look on page 3, line 19, that is one of the main changes. It does specify that, however, the president of a council or vice president of the council acting as the mayor shall only vote as an alderman. No alderman may vote as the mayor to break a tie. And the reason that I brought this bill forth is there was an instance in another community where we assumed that a person on a city council could only vote once. Looking at the law, that was kind of a gray area. And in this case, their president of their council assumed the responsibilities of the mayor and ended up voting on an issue. The issue was a tie, and since that person was filling in for the mayor, broke that tie. I don't think anyone should have, and I guess it was assumed by other city councils that nobody should vote twice, so that's why I brought this bill forth. The other thing that it does change is on page 4, lines 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that we found out is after this community had a little bit of turmoil, they had a lot of resignations. And what happened was they got down to where they had 3 city council members out of 6. Well, they can't do business with only 3 city councilmen. So this section adds a piece that says when a seat on the council is vacant due to a removal, resignation, death, or by operation of law, the quorum consists of the majority. At the moment, it says majority of the members of the council who remain qualified. I know there is an amendment that was going to be brought forth just for cleanup language to make the language in here for a city council be consistent across the board. But those are the two main things it does. There's some other cleanup language in here mainly to clarify some things, but the two main parts are what I spoke about. I appreciate the time, and I will stand by for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have any other proponent testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. I apologize for the delay. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask for this amendment to be distributed.
Yep. Pages, if you want to grab those and distribute them, please.
May I speak to the bill and the amendment?
Yes, you may.
The bill, with or without this amendment that's coming around, is exactly as Senator Feagin just described. We originally wanted to clarify what happens when vacancies exist on a city council, and so that section is in this bill. And the legislators who were involved in this issue wanted to clarify the voting twice issue. All of this comes about because when you look at this chapter of law that deals with the aldermanic form of government, you have to read this piece together with this piece in order to figure out what happens. And so all through the Senate process and with the amendment that you now have in front of you, instead of having to do all of that, what we're trying to do is write what we mean into the law. And so we are simply trying to clarify so that Chapter 9-8, dealing with the aldermanic form, does what it says and says what it means, and we don't have to go through these mental gymnastics to figure out what was intended when the laws were originally passed. And so we would urge your consideration of both the bill and the amendment, and I'd be happy to stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other proponent testimony? Do we have any other proponent testimony on Senate Bill 64? Seeing none, I will move on to opponent testimony. Is there any opponent testimony on House or Senate Bill 64? Seeing none, I guess there is no reason for rebuttal, and I will now open it up to committee questions or action on the amendment. Representative Hawks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move Amendment 64YA.
Second. I have a first and a second. Is there any discussion on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, it's simple cleanup language. It doesn't do anything to the actual intent of the bill. It just cleans up, as Ms. Taylor explained, it just cleans up the language and puts into writing what is meant by the bill.
Any further comments on that? Seeing none, all in favor of Amendment 64YA, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? So moved. Now we will move on to questions, discussion on Senate Bill 64 as amended. Representative Soli.
Thank you. I have a question of the Senator. Thank you. Looking at page 4 at the part of the bill that's trying to address what happens when there's a council member that's missing, it says the quorum consists of the majority members of the council who remain qualified. And I have a little bit of familiarity of the situation that brought this up. But I wonder if you could describe what would have happened there had this been in law and what numbers we're working with here. Was it just three council members that were left?
Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, yes, there were three council people left. By law, from what I understand, they really can't do business, but they did anyways. That would mean that they can't appoint any other council people, so they weren't legally allowed to do business. This law would change that.
Follow-up? So in this case, the quorum was what number?
Mr. Chairman, three. Oh, I'm sorry, to answer your four, it would be their quorum that they should have legally. Okay. They had three at the table.
So follow-up, Mr. Chair, I don't want to go on. So the legal quorum for that group of three would have been two, is that correct?
In this case, I believe that's how it reads, yes.
So that, this seems positive, but it also seems like a very small number.
Mr. Chairman.
Is the intent then to be able to continue to do business, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. All yes, right. It's to allow them to legally do business. Like I said before, they really shouldn't be doing any business at this point. I don't know if that was ever something considered in the past or not.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Greenfield.
Thank you. This is for the senator as well. Senator Feagin, I have a question. When the amendment was put in, and it was page 4, line 15, how does it help to have the words, and the mayor may not break a tie on such ordinance or proposal? How would that help?
It's just referring back to what the authority of the vote of a mayor is when it comes to breaking a tie. It's just to clarify things a little bit better.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My curiosity's got me. How did we get this far through the Senate and then have a number of changes to it may be a rhetorical question, but I'm kind of curious because there are some substantial changes here.
Mr. Chairman, a lawyer looked at it. Yes, apparently a lawyer had looked at the current bill in its format and had questions regarding all the different variations of how a council or an alderman was described, and that's why it came forth. You're welcome.
Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing portion of Senate Bill 64 and now open it up to committee question or committee discussion and or action. Representative Hawks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to pass.
Second.
I have a do pass motion from Representative Hawks and a second by Representative Quam. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I come from the aforementioned community where a lot of these issues came up. We had some significant problems in that community with regard to people quitting the city council, votes coming up in front of the council, and how those votes were carried out. And I think that the clarification that this bill brings will help in future situations like this. I hope that future situations like this don't occur in other communities, because it has been very trying for my community. But in the event that it does, I want it to be a much cleaner process than it was for us. So I encourage your yay vote.
Any other discussion on the motion? I will add my 2 cents worth here, I guess, as a past mayor, and in seeing what happened in that community and the issues they had to deal with, I could not possibly imagine how difficult that was for them to move forward. And I think there are some really good changes in here to allow communities to be able to continue to do business in these situations. And getting back to the question of the president of the council being able to vote twice if the mayor's absent, I remember back in my days that came up once, and I was informed even back in the 90s that I could cast 2 votes, one as the alderman and one as the president of the council, since I serve as the mayor. And I didn't do that because I didn't feel that was right. So I'm really glad to see this in here and have that clarified. So any other discussion? Representative Rowe?
Yep. My only concern with this, and I know the situation, so I get it, but you know, you need to have the majority of the elected body. So I'm assuming the hidden message here, or kind of between the lines, is there's only 3 of the elected body. So we, you know, so you can't get the quorum, because I wouldn't want it to land like we do. I mean, it's just like the legislature now. We have to have the majority of the 70, whether they're there or not, so that we don't have a council sitting with 3 people making decisions for the majority. I mean, so I'm assuming that's in here, that we know that it's not just understood.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. I have a do pass motion, first from Representative Hawks, seconded by Representative Quam. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representative Bruner.
Aye.
Craig.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Marty.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
Rosem.
Aye.
Shanefish.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Consent excused. We have 12 aye, 1 excused.
Senate Bill 64 has received a affirmative vote by 12-0 with a due pass motion. We'll go to the floor.
Consent. Move consent.
Second. Nope. All right, I have a motion from Representative Soli for consent. Is anybody opposed to that? Yes. Or is there a second?
Yes.
We have opposition, so we'll not go on consent.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenfield.
Personal privilege.
We have in the audience today the Dolan senior class, the government class, and I'm very happy to have them here. Their teacher, Ms. Satter, is with them, and the bus driver is Mr. Jim Halscher, also known as our Dolan superintendent. So welcome.
All right, we'll now move on to the hearing for Senate Bill 65. Do we have any proponent testimony on Senate Bill 65? Senator, good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Scott Feagan, State Senator, District 25 again. Before you is Senate Bill 65, and what this bill aims to do is specify what the rules are around a recall petition. Again, as similar community as discussed before, what happened here is the recall petition for one of the I believe it was for their mayor, came to the, before the city council, and they decided that they would decide whether it was valid or not from the based on the grounds of the recall petition, not necessarily the signatures themselves, because that is in statute today. And they voted to reject the petition. The community, you're required to have 15% of the registered voters sign this petition, which is quite the undertaking to do that. And they had, I believe, 314 signatures in a town of, I believe, about 2,700. That's quite a large number. So when I heard about this, I discussed this with, of course, our city attorney, city administrator, and then I discussed it with others from the community where it took place, and wanted to try to come up with a way in which, when this is presented to a city council, that they actually have to have valid grounds if they're going to reject a petition. I know in our city, I'm the mayor of Del Rapids as well, we had a rezone that was done. The people petitioned that out, and we were instructed that we would recognize the petition and accept it and set an election date. I assume that's what you're supposed to do with any petition. That's apparently not the case. So what this bill does is on page 1, starting on line 13, when a petition to recall is filed with the finance officer shall present the petition to the governing body at its next meeting. The section that's very important is only the petition signatures may be challenged in a manner established, and then it lists 12-1-13 through 12-1-16. So that is in statute of what is required to challenge a petition. Now, Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment here, if I could present that to the committee.
Page, please distribute that.
This is just one page. But I do, in the second paragraph, it does say a challenge to recall the petition, or it should say regarding, not or. So if you could just make that note. So, Mr. Chairman, if I could speak to the amendment as well.
You may.
As the bill. Okay. So when I first presented this bill to the Senate, it did not have this amendment, obviously. There was some concerns regarding the ability to challenge the grounds for the petition, for the recall petition. I personally feel that we're elected officials. We were put there by the voters. We should be recalled by the voters. But I also understand that there is concern by the people who are elected. So what this amendment does is it specifies the challenge on the signatures of the petition refers to 12-1-13 through 16, but then on the second paragraph it also says a challenge to the recall petition regarding the specific statement of the grounds of the recall petition must be filed in circuit court within 5 business days of the filing of the recall petition. The circuit court shall conduct an expedited declaratory judgment hearing with no right to trial by jury. And I know 5 days doesn't sound like much, but if you look under statute 12-1-13 for the signatures themselves, it specifies 5 days. That's why originally I think it was listed. It was going to be 20, and I changed it to be consistent with the other. So this gives the city council the ability to challenge it in court and not to challenge it within their city council meeting. The other thing that was changed in the bill was the reference of auditor to change it to finance officer, and that's because that's just to clarify what an auditor is. It's more commonly accepted that the finance officer in a community is the one that does this. They are also the ones that run the election, so they're your election official. So these are the changes I have in this bill before you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any other proponent testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. And if I may address the bill and the amendment.
You may.
And I'll just give you a little background on recall elections. In probably 25 years, I think I've seen maybe 5 of them. They are always incredibly divisive. They are always a mean process. Municipal officials are the only ones that are subject to recall. You can't recall county, township, school board, legislators. You can't recall anybody else. Only municipally elected officials can be recalled. So this is that narrows the scope of what you're dealing with. It's only our issue. They are very rare. They're a very bad thing when they happen in the community, and the scars in this community in particular, and in any of the others where this has happened, they will be lasting scars, and there it will be years before that community comes whole again because of the divisiveness of this kind of thing. And so for that reason, we were asking for the amendment that you have in front of you, because what you don't want to have these be is a tool for harassment against an elected person. And that's the concern with the attention that gets put on stuff like this when there's publicity around this kind of a process. And so we just wanted to be clear that you have the ability to challenge the grounds. And so the grounds have to be true. You can't just say the mayor did that and it's not true, and call for a recall. And so there has to be an ability to challenge the grounds for the recall petition. And this amendment allows that challenge to happen in front of a neutral third party, a judge, in front of an expedited process. It's very rare, but we think this step is necessary, and we hope you'll support the amendment and then support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other proponent testimony? Do we have any other proponent testimony on Senate Bill 65? Seeing none, we will move on to opponent testimony. Do we have any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 65? Seeing none, there's no reason for a rebuttal, and I will open it up to committee questions and or action. Just one comment on the amendment. In case it gets moved, on the first line in the second paragraph, it says a challenge of the recall petition or specific statement. That should read a challenge of the recall petition regarding the specific statement. So if somebody is going to move the amendment, that's the way it should read. That's all. Any comments on that? Seeing none, is everybody clear with how the amendment reads? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. All right, now we will move on to committee questions of Senate Bill 65 as amended. Seeing no questions, I will move on to committee action. Heineman.
Mr. Chair, I move to pass 65YB as amended.
Representative Hawks, second. Any comments on that motion?
No.
Okay. I have a first by Representative Heineman, a second by Representative Hawks with the due pass motion on Senate Bill 65. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Bruner.
Aye.
Craig.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Marty.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
Rosen.
Aye.
Shane Fish.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tulson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
The vote is 12 aye, 1 excused.
Senate Bill 65, as amended, has received affirmative vote for the due pass. We will move on to Senate Bill 74. Any proponent testimony? Hello, Representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kent Peterson, Representative District 19 from Salem. Senate Bill 74 comes as a result of, if you remember, to Mother's Day this year, the tornado that went through Delmont. And thank God that nobody died, because it was not good. And as a result of that, this addresses what happened, and the people elected, they did a bunch of damage in one of the wards in the town, and the people elected from that ward lost their houses and couldn't live there. And by law, not living in the ward from which you're elected creates a vacancy. And this bill would simply allow people displaced from the area from a natural disaster to continue to serve until the end of their term. This also, if you remember back 1998 in Memorial Weekend, Spencer tornado, and that's 10 miles from where I grew up, and many of my classmates were part of that, and unfortunately, six people perished in that tornado. But this would have affected them as well, and just as a way to put it into law that allows them to, obviously they can resign if they would want to, but if they don't want to, this would clarify this law. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration and stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Do we have any other proponent testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. For all the reasons stated, we support this bill. It is just a fact of law that if you don't live in the ward from which you were elected, it creates a vacancy on the city council. And even if your house doesn't exist anymore, apparently it creates the vacancy. And so we just want to clarify that they can continue to serve. Thank you.
Any other proponent testimony? We have any other proponent testimony on Senate Bill 74? Seeing none, we will move into opponent testimony. Any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 74? Seeing none, no reason for a rebuttal, and I open it up for committee questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenfield.
I move to pass.
Second.
Who is my second? All right. Any discussion on that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Peterson for bringing forth this bill. I think it's a very, very good bill. It could happen to any one of us in our communities. I don't think that there's any sinister intent. I think the criteria has been pretty well laid out that it covers flood, tornado, fire, natural disaster. There's no loopholes in there with any sinister intent. So, very good bill.
Any further discussion on the motion at hand? Seeing none, we have a do pass motion by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Shane Fish. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Bruner.
Aye.
Craig.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Marty.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
Rosem.
Aye.
Shane Fish.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Consett excused. The vote is 12 aye, 1 excused.
Senate Bill 74 has received affirmative vote by 12 to 0 with a due pass motion.
Mr. Chair, move consent.
I have a first and a second to move consent. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
So moved. We have a first from Representative Rosem, a second from Representative Hawks. My secretary is keeping me in line. It's so simple for us. All right, we will now open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 90. And we will take proponent testimony. Representative.
Good morning. Good to see you all. I'm Bert Tolson, Lake Norton, District 2 Representative, and it's an honor to be here to serve, you know, to testify in front of the best committee in Pierre. So it's great to be here.
Nice to see you on the other side of the desk.
So Senate Bill 90, I just will read it. It's very simple. No state, political subdivision, or public body may prevent a person from recording through audio or video technology a public meeting that is open to the public as long as the recording is reasonable and not disruptive. And that's the bill. There'll be other testifiers, and as you know, I have my baseball here, and I'm the leadoff man on this bill. Senator Holeen will be batting second and move me to second, and then we have the the South Dakota Newspaper Association, he'll be batting third and hoping he can drive me in. So thank you very much. And we might need a cleanup hitter, but that'll be you.
Thank you, Representative. Do we have any other proponent testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the, what I just learned is the best committee up in Pierre. I'm on the Senate side of local government. I thought we were pretty good, but I was, Reed Holine, State Senator, District 5, Watertown, South Dakota. I was joking with Representative Tolson that I am supposed to be the sacrificial bunt to get him into scoring position, but we will just go with what we have. Kind of a funny story on Senate Bill 90. On the Senate side, they actually laughed at me. They said, why is this bill even needed? Because it seems so obvious to us up here at the Capitol, where we are recorded in every single committee meeting and on the floor, and everything that we say is recorded. It's just second nature to us. We don't even think about it. It's the public's right to know what we are doing. However, in South Dakota, in lots of political subdivisions, this is not the case. I won't call out the cities by name, but over the last year and a half, there have been multiple instances where at meetings, the public officials have kicked people out or stopped them from recording, either through audio or video, their public meetings. And I want to stress, these are open meetings. They are open to the public. The entire premise is that it's the public's right to know. And we have a very long history in South Dakota of honoring open meetings. Here's a decision from 1975 from then Attorney General William Janklow, after there was a big brouhaha about someone being kicked out for trying to tape record a meeting. And at the end of his decision, he had to weigh in. And he said, the presence of tape recorders may cause some hesitancy on the part of certain individuals to speak their mind, but the members of the public who have a right to attend the meeting should not be required to surrender their rights merely because certain members of the board might have some hesitancy about expressing their views on a controversial subject on the record. That's from 1975. We have a long history of honoring that, and this bill just kind of reinforces that. This bill was actually brought to Representative Tolson and my attention from a lady in Groton by the name of Betty Breck. She would like to be here, but she is a snowbird down in Florida, and I told her don't bother to come back up to Pierre for this. She was one of the people who was involved in one of these cases where she was kicked out for trying to record a meeting. And she tried to say, it's my right to record this, but they said, sorry, there's nothing in law. So they kicked her out. And she told me of an example when she was living in Alaska, where Alaska does have this law. And she, in an instance in Alaska, she was able to hold up the law and say, look, I have a right. So at the end of her letter to me, she said, it was only because my rights were clearly outlined in applicable law that I was able to assert those rights. Senate Bill 90, with Senate Bill 90 enacted into law, South Dakota citizens likewise will be able to easily assert their rights to tape open public meetings. That's all we're asking for here, so I would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other proponent testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, David Bordewijk, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Newspaper Association. I've got two men on base, and I hope I don't whiff up here. So just trying to make contact. So put the ball in play. We do support Senate Bill 90. This is obviously a very straightforward piece of legislation. And you may ask, well, why is this necessary? Well, over the years in my position at South Dakota Newspaper Association, I have fielded questions from not only reporters of our newspapers, but the general public as well, just I think sometimes because they sort of see us associated with open meetings, open government issues, so they call us. But the question will come up about, you know, look, I was at the council meeting Monday night. I had my recorder there, and I wanted to set it up on a tripod and record it, and I was told, no, I couldn't do that. Can they do that? Can they prohibit me from doing that? Well, back and forth ensues, and around and around we go, and we always have taken the position, yes, you do have a right to record. In fact, for reporters, I think it's born in the First Amendment. They have a First Amendment right to be able to do their duty and when they report the news and cover public meetings. You know, and over time, that technology has changed. Years ago, reporters would simply have a sort of a, just a small audio recorder, cassette recorder, that put on the table and would turn it on at the beginning of the meeting and record away. And most often that was for the purpose of, for reporters, it still is, for accuracy, to be able to go back to that tape and listen to that tape and make sure they get the quotes right. And the use of public officials can understand and appreciate the necessary the need to get the quotes right. But over time, technology has changed, and so we've moved from simply just having an audio tape recorder where now you can simply have, in fact, your iPhone could be the video recorder and could record not only audio but video. And oftentimes that is what's used. So I think you know, I think it's seems obvious and for you know, fairly simple here. I think the language about, you know, so long as the recording is reasonable, obvious, and not disruptive is important language in the bill, because I think that sets the guidelines for a board to be able to set guidelines or rules for if there are people that want to record a meeting. Okay, you can set up your camera here or here, but not here. I mean, you have that authority, that ability as a board to be able to do that under the statute. And so with that, I would urge you to support Senate Bill 90 and move it along. So thank you very much.
Do we have any other proponent testimony on Senate Bill 90? Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 90? Seeing none, we'll move on to opponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Yvonne Taylor with the Municipal League, rising as an opponent only because there are no other options. But I wanted to distribute a letter from the City of Groton that expresses their concerns with what happened in their own particular meeting. But I also want to stress that the Municipal League does not oppose this bill. So, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other opponent testimony? Is there any other opponent testimony on Senate Bill 90? Seeing none, I will offer a short rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bert Tolson, District 2. I reserve the right here to have my second testifier to help me out on this. Mrs. Taylor said that she's not an opponent, and she just wants this on record, what her handout was. And so I urge you to read that, but I urge you to pass this bill. Thank you. Any comments, Senator Hoyne?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was aware of certain heartburn from the city of Groton and some of the other places, but I do want to stress these are open meetings. It is the public's right to know. The elected officials will adapt and learn, just as I'm sure our predecessors learned to live with the fact that we were videotaped all the time. And I just want to stress again, it's the public's right to know. And it's not really opposition from the opponents. It's more just questions. But elected officials will adapt and just want to stress that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll give us 1 second to finish reading through this since it was just handed out, or at least myself. All right. I'll open it up to committee questions at this time. Representative Bruner.
I have a question. I'm not sure who could answer it, possibly Ms. Taylor. Is she here? I'm sorry. Question. You can't hide. Mr. Chair, after reading through this letter from the concerns of the city of Groton, do you see anything in this bill of the law that would preclude city council from setting some boundaries as to where or how somebody could set up a camera or recording system?
Mr. Chairman? No, I do not. And in fact, that'll be our advice.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Heineman, and then Representative Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Taylor, this actually came up, I believe, in one of our city council meetings as well. The term comes to mind, archivable, because that was the discussion that was held. The letter to Groton, of course, addresses the issue of videotaping unattended and a few other things, whatever. And I'm certainly supportive of what you're trying to do here, what the sponsors are trying to do here. But it's funny. It seems like quite intuitive, but it's actually more complicated than when you think it is, because the issue of obvious, reasonable, and obvious, I would think, would include archivable, because the question our council had was if you can go back and reproduce that. Well, if the person that has that videotape is the only one that has access to it, and if they've erased something, then you don't have an archivable object. That's kind of what the problem was. So how can you address that maybe in the words reasonable and obvious? I know I'm kind of lengthy here, but I'm telling you that it's more complicated than you think it is. So,
Mr. Chairman, Yvonne Taylor again. I guess my answer would be that I don't think if the city were performing the recording, then they could keep it for the length of time that they felt necessary. Where somebody else is keeping the recording, that's out of our control. I don't think there's any requirement that anybody anywhere keep recordings. The official minutes of the meeting are the official record of what happened at the meeting. And so the recordings are sort of irrelevant. And so I don't think they need to be kept now. I don't think under this bill they would need to be kept by anybody.
Okay. Thank you. That answers that.
Representative Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to follow up on his question because I'm seeing another side, and this is very concerning. If someone comes in, let's assume the media, and most media is very good, I'll give them that. You always have a few bad apples. I saw it happen on the floor when I was the only one the other day when they're kind of barging in and, you know, the public's right to know, and they were where they shouldn't have been, in my opinion. But my concern is exactly where we know things are taken out of context. We know we're quoted out of context. So that's my concern when you have somebody videotaping and recording that then they're in control of that and there's nothing that regulates that it has to be in its entirety. So you're playing that over the media, over TV. I really think, I mean, not that I disagree with this idea, but boy, I think there's a whole lot more that has to go into this. Do you, I mean, am I making any sense?
Mr. Chairman? If this committee can find a way from top to bottom between the every elected official down to the media, down to the citizen activists to make everybody tell the truth, this will be quite a committee.
Yep, that's for sure. Good luck.
Do you have any other questions?
That's a toughie.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Quam.
Well, I think Mr. Smith would like to make some comments, and I will allow him if you would.
In regards to Representative Rosen's question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. If you'll permit that, Mr. Chairman. Justin Smith, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Newspaper Association. Representative Rosen, in response to your question, I would say this. The risk of misquotes, the risk of commentary runs every day in any kind of public meeting if a member of the press is simply sitting there in the room. In actuality, this could hopefully improve the accuracy of the quotes, improve the accuracy of the reporting that happens on those types of meetings, because now the record is permanently in the hands of the news media person. Maybe the quotes will be more accurate. They have it right at hand and can actually use that information. If that answers your question.
Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, I will close the public hearing portion on Senate Bill 90 and now open it up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to comment something that we'd heard a previous committee member talk about. Points 2 and 6 that were given to us on this concerns from the city of Croton. I think we understand the concern about somebody recording, editing them to their liking, as it says, and then using them against council members in 2, in point 6. That perhaps a city needs to consider hiring its own videographer so the entire meeting is recorded and retained to combat the possibility that some private video is questionable, etc. The mass media does this all the time. It's done it to many of us. It does it to those in Congress. And we see it every night if you watch the news. Usually just a sound bite is taken from an individual, and then the commentator gives you supposedly the rest of what you said. And that's the day in which we live. And nowadays, the media is no longer the press. The press is not just the press. It's the general population, anybody with a cell phone and with social media and a Facebook page and any other kind of page where they will edit and they will post something about supposedly what you said. We can't fix it. I like the comment from Mr. Bell that who spoke?
Smith.
Mr. Smith spoke that there may be the other side, where perhaps citizens might tell more of the truth than what we may generally or most often receive in reporting. And it's a risk that we take. Just comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can echo what the former representative said. You know, the sound bites and so on can be pulled out. Things can be misconstrued. I think it's very important, though, that maybe at a local level, a municipal meeting, a council meeting, whatever, that some criteria is set up so that people know exactly what's expected of them as guests when they come in. As I was going through this Groton paper here, the sheet, I mean, I don't think it's fair to stick microphones in front of people's faces or cause disruption. I think that maybe that's a time for them to upgrade their handbook or get a policy going and leave it back at the local level so that it can be a reasonable and viable situation for all.
Representative Soley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak just in favor of this short bill. As a state legislator, new to this now 4 years ago, I remember being surprised. I mean, I knew it was happening, but that people had listened to me say something back home. It was usually pretty positive, but the whole idea that I had given up my privacy pretty much when I walked in this building, and it took me a little while to realize that. and then to appreciate it. So thinking about someone being kicked out of a public meeting because they were trying to tape it is really anathema to me. This is really, really important, and I would agree with the previous representative that it'll fall on the local government where this happens to set some reasonable rules, and I trust that they can do it. So let's vote for it.
Any further discussion? Not. Do we have action on the bill? Representative Qualm?
Move to pass.
I have a do pass motion from Representative Qualm, seconded by Hawks. Any discussion on that motion?
Oh, just a few brief comments. I would agree with everything that's been said here. You know, when you put yourself in public office, everything you say is subject to exactly what you said or something, somebody taking something out of context. I think that's just the way it is. There's no way we could prevent it, but yet it's a public meeting. The people have the right to know, and I think we let the let everybody set some parameters. You know, microphones in the face, no, not appropriate. Taking videos, absolutely. Anyone in here could be videoing this on their cell phone, guaranteed. Yeah, see, Senator's already doing that. So I think it's a good bill, and it makes sense.
Any further discussion on the motion? I have a couple quick comments. I'll have to agree with Representative Qualm and with the bill, I guess, in my years in city government. It's been standard practice for me to be videotaped at different times, and I know our finance officer has a video recorder there, and I know other individuals have. So I guess it's just standard operating procedure, I guess, where I come from. And, you know, just remind everybody who does serve as a mayor or president of a council or alderman or council member, they are performing the public's business, and you know, things they say or do, you know, they should be held accountable for good and bad. So with that, we have a do pass motion by Representative Qualm, a second by Representative Hawks. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Bruner.
Aye.
Craig.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Marty. Qualm.
Aye.
Rosem.
No.
Shane Fish.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Consent excused. We have 11 aye, 1 nay, 1 excused.
Senate Bill 90 has received affirmative vote by 11 to 1 with the do pass motion. Any discussion of the committee for the good of the committee? If not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. I have a first by Representative Tolson, second by Representative Qualm. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. We are adjourned.